Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Well, our own William Ivy Long is a many-time, at least four-time, Tony Award-winning costume designer for Broadway. He's sought out by Hollywood. He's done a whole lot more than that. But the most important thing for us right now is that he's coming home a lot. And the reason is that he's gone back to his dad's hometown, Seaboard, up near Roanoke Rapids, up close to the Virginia line, and has gotten actively involved as a community member. And William Ivy Long has agreed to visit with his friends in Chapel Hill to talk about this project. And William Ivy Long, thanks for giving up. Well, I don't know what we're pulling. What are we pulling you away from today?
I'm actually working on Grey Gardens, which is the moving to Broadway, from the film to musical, now off Broadway, now to Broadway.
Well, and how does the costuming differ in each one of those settings?
Oh my goodness! Well, off Broadway, they give you some slack, but if you're paying $100 a ticket, they expect everything perfect. I can make some mistakes off Broadway, and they go, "Oh, isn't that charming?" But there's a big difference, and we like to think that, you know, the highest standard of art today is a Broadway play or a Broadway musical. I mean, we do. I don't. I think there, you know, other people who will disagree, but I like to think that. And so, you know, we're having to try harder, and they're rewriting, and they've added three new songs, and try putting a new opening in tonight. And for me, that means new shoes and a new hat. it comes down to some simple, basic things sometimes, but it all sets the tone.
Does the work of a costume designer with respect to ongoing production ever end? Do you end on opening
night? Well, hopefully it doesn't. Hopefully they still call me in. We're getting ready. November the 14th, we're celebrating the 10th anniversary of Chicago, the revival, this amazing phenomenon of our version of Bob Fosse's Chicago and Candor and Ebb. Chicago, and we have Usher in it right now, and Brooke Shields was just playing Roxy. Usher's playing Billy Flynn. I just put Ashley Simpson in to Roxy in London. We have a London production running. We've had 18 different productions all around the globe, plus several touring companies. So what it tells you is it's a really good story, and the people involved have told it very well. And Barry and Fran Weisler, who are the sort of cowboy and cowgirl producers of Broadway, and they shoot from the hip and take no prisoners and all that, they are very creative in their casting. And so if you aren't inspired but to see it with a certain cast, wait 6 months and you've got Melanie Griffith. Or you have George Hamilton. Oh, that'd be interesting.
Yeah, let's get that.
Wait a minute.
Well, great idea.
Bring him down from heaven. And so... we've had all manner of Tay Diggs and Alan Thicke. They've all played. And then Roxy, we have just a terrific bunch of ladies. And they can mix and match. We have about four roles, Roxy, Velma, Billy Flynn, and Mama Morton, who can be played by different guest stars. And I think the vitality and the different energies that they bring to it. The Usher energy. And I had about four fittings with Usher because, of course, we made all his tuxedos and then remade them and then remade them again. And he's quite a slick dresser and he really understands fashion. So
he brought
a new demographic to the Great White Way. Let me tell you right now.
Well, that's leading to a question that I have. When the new actor or actress comes in and you work on the costume, is the costume going to stay the same except that it is adapted for the body of the particular actor
or
actress?
One could say that. That is a very good textbook answer. It stays the same, but it is adapted for the body. Actually, with Roxy, for instance, the leading lady, one of the two leading ladies, I am adamant about using the same Roxy lace. It's a stretch lace with roses in it, and it really says the type of femininity that we're doing. It's a today look at the 1920s. So it's a really flapper dress, but made like a really hot club girl outfit today. And by keeping the same fabric, I can do a whole range: sleeves, no sleeves, plunging front, plunging back, no front. All this. Rita Wilson just played it, Roxy.
And, well, William, that's the.
I did a whole different variation on her, and of course Ashley Simpson is a totally different. She's about 10. And so that would be different from someone else.
So if depending upon the body characteristics, you feel compelled to...
I feel compelled. It wouldn't serve them because they're out there doing it. I'm in the basement painting shoes, and they're out there wowing them every night. So they are the performers, the one who really has to be served in this instinct. Now, we do have a template. I mean, it's all black, and it's, mm-hmm. in certain cases, there's certain fabric. But within that template, I think it's a wonderful... I'm thrilled the producers let me do it. That I get to interpret them and always shifting, always changing. Keeps the show very alive.
So if an actress or an actor has a particular, I don't want to say deficiency, but a particular body structure that the audience might appreciate, you can cover. You can help.
It's the hips. I'm just going to tell you, it's the hips. Men and women, it's the hips. That's the thing they always like. But, of course, we're lucky. In Chicago, it's all in black, so everything's very slimming.
And what is it in men? Is it our mind?
Oh, it's the shoulders are stoopy or slopey, or they're not tall enough, or, you know, like that.
Yeah.
Things like that. Or it's itchy. Oh, I'm not used to wearing, you know, a necktie, much less a bow tie. Lots of things like that. So there's a bit of coaxing going on, and a lot of dragging out of pictures of Cary Grant. I wave Cary Grant for everybody.
Right?
Sort of calms everybody down.
What do you say when you wave that picture?
Well, I did for Usher. I said, now, this is Cary Grant's my hero, and this is the look, and double-breasted. And Usher, I don't think, had worn a double-breasted before. He had only worn single-breasted.
Yeah,
and by waving that Cary Grant, he got sort of more excited about it because it's really classic.
You have to move people, even on the stage, move them towards accepting the kind of dress that is appropriate for that shows them the best and is appropriate for the production.
Well, listen, I don't have a gun in my hand, and I can't make them do it. So I have to convince them in whatever means possible that what I'm trying to put them in makes them look fabulous. Not just okay, not just fine. So, boy, oh, boy, I've learned a few fast-talking tricks. But ultimately, the mirror doesn't lie. So words are words, but ultimately they have to feel great. They have to feel that through my support and the hair and makeup and everything, and, of course, the director and the choreographer, but everything we do helps them become that other person because it's all about playing a role. And all of the ingredients, and I'm just one of the many ingredients, they all add up to help the performer become the character that the playwright has written and that the composers have written. And so really, we're all just helpers. We're helpers on this journey of telling the story.
Well, William Ivy Long, I think a lot of people know about your connections to North Carolina. We know and love your brother and his family. Robert is just a great Chapel Hill person.
Memorial Hall. He was the chief lead consultant
on the redo
of that. Aren't we proud of that?
It is so wonderful.
It's spectacular.
And that led to other great commissions for him. I hope he's charging enough to...
He does a lot of pro bono, let me tell
you. Yeah, I know. The other is that your parents were closely connected to the school and your mama, and also to the beginning of the
Lost Colony.
Of the wonderful Lost Colony. Your mama, I think, played
Queen Elizabeth for 10 years. My father, in 1932, was Prof. Koch's graduate assistant and was down there when they were picking the sand dune to turn into the amphitheater.
Wow.
And my father was the one writing all the notes. How about that?
Wow.
Because he was this great story. When Prof. Koch founded the Carolina Playmakers, and in his first class was Elizabeth Leigh Green and Thomas Wolfe. And it was 1918, so it was the war. So there's only one boy, and he was 7 feet tall or 12 feet tall or something. Anyway, they wouldn't let him fight because he was too frightening and lanky. And so it was all girls and Thomas Wolfe. And then the second year, more women came in. And the second year, Bernice Kelly Harris was in the playwriting department. Well, skip several more years, and she became a teacher. And skip a few more years, and she went to Seaboard to teach what the Founding Fathers wanted their children, the farmers, just farmers, to learn elocution, Greek, and are you ready, in high school in 1920s playwriting.
Now,
and
that's just hard for me to believe.
It's very hard to believe. Now that, you know, so many schools, through various choices, cut back even on the band program, the music program. But here they were teaching elocution and
Greek. Where was
and
this
playwriting.
Now? Where was this? Where
Seaboard.
Was that? Seaboard,
this
North
is
Carolina.
Seaboard, North Carolina.
Where
I live.
It? Where is it? Where is Seaboard?
Where is it?
Yes.
Spiritually?
No, I mean, nobody, you know, Seaboard,
exactly.
I know
where
it's your
it?
Home now, but people in Chapel Hill, if you go past east of Raleigh, they don't know what you're talking about.
Well, I'll tell you, if there's a hurricane and you're rerouted because of flooding, you usually go through Seaboard. So pause, and I'm on Main Street in a big yellow house. So really, we're sort of the escape route. That's how people know us now. But we used to be just a bunch of farms, and the town didn't get started until about the 1870s. Because that's when they really started shipping out the cotton and the peanuts.
In a high school in the middle of the last century, or the early part of the last century,
1926, and my father was the first, her first playwriting student, and he got a full scholarship to Chapel Hill. It was the Depression, of course, and in playwriting, and I think it was the first playwriting scholarship. Given, and it totally set the course. I wouldn't have existed because my mother was also a Carolina playmaker, but my father would have remained a farmer, and so nothing wrong with farming.
He would have gone back to Seaboard and farmed.
We're still farming.
Well, so
I still have the family farm. I'm the 10th generation. I'm not really farming it. I sublet it to Bill Turner. And he farms. He's been farming for 18 years.
So you own the family. Did you have to buy back the family farm?
I did indeed. Oh, my goodness. And, in fact, I had to buy another house because the family's still living in the family homes. So I decided right before my father died, I knew my parents. They died 6 weeks apart in 1998 and various natural causes. And right before my father's, I mean, it could almost be very theatrical, though it is, his dying wish is that we move back to Seaboard. So.
It's hard to move back to Seaboard when you're working in New York.
It's very hard. Thank you very much for noticing. But I'm a dutiful son, so I bought a cousin's house, and we had his birthday party in 1997 there, and he was so happy. I've got pictures, and it's just happy as he's been. Had Parkinson's disease, so his brain was right there, but he couldn't move very well. So, and my mother was there, too, and it was just great.
This was you had bought?
I had to buy a cousin's house and move back, and because, as I said, cousins were in the farmhouse that my father was born in. And, then they died, and then the next...
William Ivy Long, let's take a quick break.
Yes.
We'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm visiting with William Ivy Long, Tony Award-winning costume designer.
Whom you can't shut up.
No, I don't want to shut up. I mean, forgive me forever, even interrupting with a question.
You're doing. I'm not looking at my watch.
No, but what we've done is we've got this native North Carolinian who has swept away Broadway and Hollywood with his talents, and now he's come back home, and we're trying to find out. You come back home to Seaboard. Let me tell you a story I heard and see if it's.
But oh, it you was were snooping around last week.
But it is that you're when your father was coming close to dying, and you came and bought a house. In Seaboard and brought him back to take a look at it, that while you all were down there, there was some trouble that really had an influence on you. Do you know what I'm talking about? Does that ring a bell with you?
Oh, yes. In fact, when we were there, one of the tenant farms, there had been five tenant farms and several had fallen in, but there was one that could have been fixed and nobody was living in it. It burned to the ground on Easter Sunday. And the SBI came in and determined that it was a drug manufacturing place.
Wow.
And crystal meth or something like that was being manufactured in the living room. That's how they found out what it was. And I thought, oh, my goodness, we better, this is bad, you know. And you think about, you know, people having nothing to do. And so I thought, well, we should do something. And so a bunch of friends of mine and I, people who had known how to put together nonprofits, we got together, started the Eastern Seaboard Trust, which is a nonprofit bent on preservation, but also economic development of the town and finding out what the town wanted. So what we did is we went to North Carolina Central. Dr. Zaphon Wilson brought his urban planning class. They went door to door. They asked people. We had two meetings, town meetings. The first ones in years where we asked people what they wanted.
William, it might help us to put this in perspective if you would describe Seaboard for us.
Oh, Seaboard. Oh, my goodness. It's 671 people, And it's primarily agricultural still today in 2006. And it was founded as a railroad depot. It was originally called Concord back in 1676 when we moved there. And there's a church, 1795, that's still there called the Concord Church. But then another town grew up near Charlotte and said, no, no, we're Concord, you're not. And so we had the train went by, and the town fathers said, well, we'll name ourselves after the Seaboard Airline Railroad, which fortunately comes in and picks up our cotton and tobacco and peanuts and takes them and sells them. So that's what we are. And the town's been diminishing ever since ever since World War II.
It was agricultural-based, and also it was, I guess, in the days of segregation, it was divided between the two races.
And well, it used to be. Now it's completely mixed up. What is that? Homogeneous? Homogenized. There you go. Whatever that word means. I can't think of anything but milk. And yes, that's the town. That's where it is. And so we invited these college kids to work as class projects to find out what the town wanted. We started with North Carolina Central, then NC State. Under Dr. Brian Bell, we had about six different semesters, which is 3 years.
Wow.
And
what did they find out?
They made a list, and we had 90 people at the last of the meetings. And out of 671, 90 people is a lot to show up, I'm told. And everyone voted, and number one was doctor, and then jobs, and then grocery store, and then, you know, redo the old high school like that. So 2 years ago, summers ago, the trust opened the Sally Ransom Jordan Memorial Health Clinic with a doctor, Dr. Frank Taylor, who had born and raised in Seaboard.
Now, how did that happen? How did you do
that? He called me. He said, I'd love to come back home. Can you find me a place to practice? So that was the first thing we did. It was an old laundromat that we converted with NC State students, College of Design, and we're subsequently working with
the
College
of Tech. And how was this? How did you? I mean, there's money involved here.
Well, yes. Well, aren't we? Billy Ray Hall, Mr. Hall of the Rural Center, gave us in enticement grants, and that's what helped pay for the students to come and do semesters there. And then he helped us again, and then the Office of Health and Human Services gave us a wonderful grant.
It started as a matching grant,
and then they sort of upped the matching.
State or federal?
State. North Carolina for North Carolina.
So you have a
doctor, and he's gradually building up his client base. He said rather ghoulishly, he said, don't worry, we'll pick up at flu season. And so it did. And because we started in the summer, you see, it was a little slow going because everybody was fine. So now we're building a grocery store, which we haven't had a grocery store in years. So
Tell us the story of the grocery store.
Well, it was built originally as a pharmacy and a doctor's office, two different buildings, and then it became a grocery store. But a few years ago, it was broken into so many times. They would, you know, kids wanting beer or something, and they broke the windows, and the people owning it, who had leased it from the lady who owned it, they just said, okay, enough. And so we haven't had any food, and you have to drive 12 miles to get food. And so what we did is the trust bought it, and we have an interested party who wants to rent from us, and we're retrofitting it out for a grocery store. We're turning it back into a grocery store, that should open by the summer. We're very excited about that.
William, what makes you think that the same problems that drove the former grocery store out of business won't drive the new owner or the new operator out of business?
It probably will still be there, and we'll just keep patching the windows until, you know, they stop breaking them. I think that's what you do. And you also do other things, like we are, and here comes the big plug, the Eastern Seaboard Trust, we're partnering with NC State College of Textiles and NC State College of Design, also Agriculture and Management, and we're working to create the Seaboard School of Fashion and Costume.
Now, wait a minute. Now, you're teasing me. Seaboard, with a population of 600 people, you're going to put a design school there?
We're going to put a design school. It's going to be affiliated. It's called an, there's a correct term to use. It's a, I'm so stupid, I can't remember what it's called. Anyway, it's connected, but not connected. Well, it really is connected to NC State, and where they're gonna grow their courses in design, and we're gonna have a costume shop in there where you can study and learn how to make clothes and costumes, because fashion and costume are really two different things, but really they're the same thing because I do both.
Well, now,
but this will be the first school, the only school actually in the area that teaches both. And we have all the professors on board, we have the deans on board, and right now we're making proposals again to the powers that be. And if you ask me which ones they are, I can't remember right this second. But a lot of grown-ups are involved, and a lot of them are going to receive all these applications. And we're looking at about a year and a half from now. Opening it up.
Well, that's amazing. It's quite clear to me, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but that North Carolina State University and its various colleges would not have a particular interest or wouldn't go first to Seaboard to locate expanded or affiliate facilities.
Initiative, and, that's what it's called, an initiative.
But what have you, as, I mean, they're coming because...
Well, I'm going to have to teach there, won't I?
Yeah, what have you promised that you'll do for
them? Oh, I'll teach there. I'm very excited about it because I think the basics can be learned anywhere, but we have another trick to it. Well, you saw the farm, right?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I'll get to that in a minute. That's the beginning. That's the alpha. Well, here's the omega. Nearby, 12 miles, I know this sounds like I'm making all this up, but 12 miles away from Seaboard is a new musical entertainment complex modeled on a combination of Branson, Missouri and Dollywood, headlined by Randy Parton. And
who is Dolly Parton's
younger brother. Who is terrific, country western singer and performer and overall entrepreneur. And they're opening up, and they're going to have, starting with three theaters, and then they can have up to, you know, how many dozens of theaters, depending on whether it works. And it's right on 95, and it's being developed by Michael Dunlow and several partners in Roanoke Rapids, and it's all locally owned and locally developed, and usually the word development to a preservationist like myself is anathema and just makes me cringe and, you know, scream. But this is being so, it's such a cultural asset because it's going to have so many performing arts possibilities there that I am really gung-ho about it. And the school, we've already got letters of commitment from a costume shop in New York and a scene shop in New York right on the Hudson River, and they're going to come down and open Hudson Scenic Studio South and Tricorn Costume House South. And so you can study at this school, and then you can learn how to make clothes, costumes, and fashion, and then we're going to have an automatic, hopefully if we're any good, automatic purchaser and commissioner of these costumes 12 miles away. So the students, which I did not have when I was at the Yale Drama School, it was pie in the sky, oh my, obviously it was terrific. But here you can actually learn about the rules of the marketplace, which in these days with the competition with China being so great and imagination being the premier thing that Americans can do, I think anything that makes you think about, I don't know, more possibilities and more inventive, innovative ways, more of those things, I think the better. And so having a school that then also has a place tucked under the eaves that makes these costumes and makes this scenery is really terrific training for students.
Well, William Ivy Long, we're going to take a quick break, and when you come back, I'm going to ask you where you're going to put all these things, this costume shop and the school and all that.
Mirrors, smoke and mirrors.
William Ivy Long, and I'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. I'm visiting with William Ivy Long, the Tony Award-winning costume designer on Broadway, and the the brain power, the muscle power behind an exciting, incredibly ambitious project in Seaboard, North Carolina, the home of William Ivy Long's father, where he grew up and went to school. And William, you told us about you're going to persuade a costume and set designers to come down and set up business in and around Seaboard, and you're persuading the deans of the North Carolina schools of design and agriculture and to set up classes in Seaboard. Now, where are you going to put all this stuff?
Well, we have this wonderful, we have a 7.5 acre campus downtown Seaboard, and it's the old 1926 high school designed by Charles, designed and built by Charles Boney Associates, whose grandsons and company are going to be in charge of restoring it. They're out of Wilmington and Raleigh. And so it's a very large complex. The big 1926 school has three floors. We're going to have a hospitality training center in the cellar, which was always the old kitchen, and we're going to train people who to work at Carolina Crossroads in food services. And they came to us, by the way, and said, this is the training we'd love for you to do for us. I said, oh, not stitching and make scenery? They said, no, well, first of all, hospitality. So first things first, we're doing in the basement. Then we're going to have classrooms, and but mostly we're going to be teaching and then have the manufacturing.
William,
on the second and third floor.
Particularly on the food service end of it, isn't this the kind of thing that typically in North Carolina is done by community colleges?
Well, we are partnering with Halifax Community Colleges. I'm sorry, I didn't mention that. It began, the partnering began under the much beleaguered and mud thrown upon Ted Gasper. And now continuing with the new regime, it was his idea to work with us. So we're continuing that great idea. And we're starting in January with classes, and we're just working that out right now, because that's what Carolina Crosswoods thought we could do first, to provide training for people, you know, to have jobs there. As I said, a little bit of what I do is a little pie in the sky. Oh my, even to my eyes, which roll back in my head from time to time. But we're going to train people how to work in restaurants first, and that's in the basement. And then we're going to move up and teach design for fashion and costume, and then we'll have the costume shops on the second floor and third floor. And then in the gymnasium, which was designed and built by Dr. Frank Taylor's father, Frank Taylor, who has come back and is now a doctor in town, and he designed and built it. We're turning that into a scene shop. And so to build scenery for all sorts of regional and for the whole Southeast, it's going to be really terrific. It's lots and lots of space and room for other space. So we have this campus. And as I said, it's 12 miles away from Carolina Crossroads.
Well, give us another word or two for the folks in Chapel Hill who may or may not have heard of Campus Crossroads. Again, we're enjoying the venue that your brother designed for us at Memorial Hall and some of the other performance venues here. So Chapel Hill people are not venturing out as far as Roanoke Rapids for Carolina Crossroads.
But
this is
we're going to be a destination instead of an evacuation route. It's going to be a destination.
And what will draw these sophisticated Chapel Hillians to take a two-hour drive?
Well, sophisticated Chapel Hillians will just have to slap their smart faces and come and see Hank Williams Jr. sing, who had 35,000 people come hear him in a field right next to the Randy Parton Center for the Performing Arts 3 weeks ago.
Wow.
And we have all sorts of, the contracts aren't signed, I can't really tell you these other names, but it's quite exciting, and it's true Americana. I mean, it's true American culture. If you think about America, gave three great art forms to the world. They gave jazz, we gave the musical theater, and we gave country western music. And I think we should be very proud of each of these. I certainly am, and I'm very excited to be working on them. Actually, I work with all three. So the third one is what we're celebrating over at Carolina Crossroads.
Well, let me add, this is an important question, and you can just ignore it if you want to, but the costuming for country and western music performers is incredible, but I always thought it was individual and done by the artist. Are you dressing some of these country and western people too?
Well, I'm sure I will. Right now I'm working on Randy's show, just his show that will open it, but it's going to change every season. I mean, it's not going to be the same. So you're going to have a Christmas show, you'll have an Easter show, a summer show, and then the different guest performers will probably bring their own clothes, because they're not going to be there that long. But you never know. We may originate one of their projects. And then there are all sorts of other theaters that I'm talking about. And this is a very large stage house. It's a 60-foot proscenium. It's 60 feet deep stage, and it's 60 feet to the top of the fly rail. Well, that's the Metropolitan Opera, ladies and gentlemen. That's huge.
Wow.
Well, so to say that that's just country western size, I mean, I'm telling you, that is you can do Aida there.
Wow. And, well, you don't...
Not that I'm pushing that. Please don't quote me that we're doing AIDA.
I think I got it confused. I'll co-see AIDA when it opens. William Ivy Long, one of the things that you learned and you told us about earlier as you surveyed the needs of the people in Seaboard, at least as they saw them, one of the top things that people were worried about was jobs.
Yeah.
And this seems to be addressing jobs, but this seems to be done by the Carolina Crossroads is doing the jobs.
Well, yes and no. Well, 12 miles away is far if you're walking. The first assignment that we're working on with Halifax Community College is the hospitality training, and that will be, as I said, in the ground floor in the basement. And it's a large space, and we sort of feel that that will create 15 jobs. Now, this is not 15 students. This is 15 jobs connected with the training and supervising of that whole project, because it's also going to be food preparation. And so 15 jobs is 15 more than we have right now. And then if you go upstairs and start with the NC State school process, training process, and then you have the costume shops itself, you keep adding and adding and adding. And you got to start with something, you know.
Well,
15 is a good one.
We might be long. Let's take a quick break and we'll come back and we'll find out how you're going to pay for all of this stuff.
Maybe I won't come back.
I'm talking to William Ivy Long. He and I'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm visiting with William Ivy Long. We know William Ivy Long as somebody, a North Carolina native who's made a big success on Broadway as a Tony-winning costume designer, well-known. Now, William, big-time Hollywood, too. I mean, you know, you're not content to just stay in one place. You're also moving back to North Carolina. You've been telling us about the things that you're interested in doing. For those who joined us late, in his father's home, small hometown up in northeastern North Carolina near Roanoke Rapids, a whole economic development project, including an incredible idea about renovating the old high school or the old school building. I guess where your dad, maybe where your
That's
dad
right.
was school.
That's right. He was in the first graduating class, 1926.
But this is really expensive, isn't it?
It's very expensive, and we're due in 2 weeks. We've done the feasibility study. Now we're doing the business plan, and we have a wonderful Dr. Liana Fryer, who has been working with us from NC State College of Textiles, and she is actually leading our team. Filling out all these forms and dotting the I's and crossing the T's about funding. And so we presented at the end of October to a first place to whom we're presenting it. And then that place is, I'm told, the sort of the good housekeeping seal of approval. And if they consider you worthy, then you can go to the next and the next. And because there's so many different divisions of it, you know, job training and then education, we have different places to apply for different. So we're going to make quite a package.
So you go to different places for different funding of different projects.
Correct. The roof's already done. I fixed the roof several years ago. Roof and drainage. I did roof and drainage for the two buildings. So they both got brand new roofs, and they've been structurally checked out. And they're in, well, you know, 1926, they're going to build it really well. And Charles Boney Associates from Wilmington, Charles Boney's grandfather, his grandsons are now going to work on the renovation with us. And it was built beautifully and really strongly. So,
William, will this be a Eastern Seaboard Trust project, or will this be a little bit different from?
No, but we're setting up a nonprofit just for the school itself. I will not even be on the board. I'm just going to be an advisor. It's going to be its own self. The trust is just to instigate. To help encourage economic development and job training and preservation, my biggest passion, but haven't mentioned much about that. Because job training is more, as I'm going to be drummed out of the Preservation Society for saying this, but job training is really primary right now. We gotta get people to believe in themselves and happy and fat and sassy. And so that's what we're working on first. And,
well, let's do talk about, I agree with you that you can't preserve if you don't have the assets to preserve, and you can't preserve if you don't have healthy, economically well-off people
and,
to
and
do
to
the
believe
preservation.
In yourself and believe that things are possible. Yeah. We're in the best country in the world, and I'm going to tell you, if you've ever sat in an audience and heard Governor Hunt talk about the challenge in the world and the challenge of India and China, especially China, and how America has to lead in innovation and imagination, I mean, that's a fire under anybody's you know what. And I sit in rapt attention, and I always go away thinking, oh goodness, what else can we do to live up to Governor Hunt's challenge? So I really do thank him a lot for getting all of us going, and he's my hero.
Well, that's so important, and I'm glad we've talked about it. But one of the really interesting things going on in Seaboard is your efforts at historic preservation. Just personal efforts look like.
Well, I love old houses.
Tell us. I mean, this Seaboard's not the first place you've collected houses, but
no,
tell us
I'm
about
sort
your
of crazy.
Tell
well,
us
I'm
about
crazy.
This.
You know, some people drink and smoke, and you know, shoot up crack cocaine, heroin, or whatever, and play cards. I don't do most of those. No, I don't do any of those.
Well, explain your craziness.
I'm pretty boring. And so what I really love to do is I love architecture, and I love envisioning what a particular unloved house looks like.
Tell us the houses that you own in Seaboard now, real quickly.
Well, let's see. I have the family farm, which I had to buy back, which is
outside of
1840. And we've got the main building, and I've restored three outbuildings, the office and then the smokehouse and the dairy. And I restored the 1900 barn, and I've got about 550 acres that we're going to hopefully bring back about 20 more buildings. And
wow.
I've got some plans, old drawings of where everything was, and they don't make any sense because they're not on a grid, if you know what I mean. There's
right,
something
right,
here.
Right, right.
They follow where the drainage ditches are, really. And because, you know, everything you dumped in the ditch that you didn't want, the offal and all that. So, but we're going to put them back, and hopefully part of the excitement is to bring the farm back to an 1840s North Carolina. Everybody had one North Carolina farm.
Really an agricultural museum, which I'd
exactly.
like to talk about for a whole program, but I can't.
Oh, that's a whole nother thing.
Yeah.
I'm told you got a little tour of that the other day.
I did, and I loved it. But tell us about the downtown houses now.
Well, the house my father was born in, which is actually the house that Paul Rose of Rose's Department Store was also born in. We haven't figured out the connection, but I think my daddy always said there was some cousinness.
And
involved.
Was that the first house you acquired, or is?
No, I don't have that.
Oh, you don't have that?
Still in it?
Okay. All right, that's the house. Tell us about the houses
have. I have just a slew of different houses. The oldest one is about 18. Well, the farmhouse is 1840, but. Then the other one is another 1850, then an 1880, and then 1900. That's where I vote out of. That's the 1900.
That's the well. Now what about
that's the yellow house? Did you see the yellow house?
Yeah, yeah.
That's where I vote.
That's the main. Now what about the family reunion?
Oh well, I used to be dragged to family reunions, so I call them family picnics because reunions sound so awful. So the family picnic. Well. Carla Stevenson provides all the food, and I swear people claim cousin with me because of the fried chicken. It's really good.
So everybody wants to get invited. You have to be a cousin to come.
Well, you do are friends of cousins.
Gotcha.
The friends of mine. So,
and how many people come?
Well, we had a lot last year and the year before. About 600.
Wow.
And I put name tags, and everybody has to check in. So, you know, and... We're very anal compulsive in that we make these little, and it tells you how you're related. You know, you're on and who you're descended from.
I saw the name tags and it does. It just.
They showed you the name tags. Aren't they funny?
It just give you the family lineage. I came out of so and so. It almost says I came out of so and so's womb. You know, it was just.
It almost says that. It's very sort of personal.
But it's wonderful. And it's, this is a very presumptuous question, but it is like, William, is this a flash in the pan? Can you sustain this high level of energy on a project? I mean,
I'm going to keep going, and then I'm going to die. And then if it's a good project, other people will keep going with it. Isn't that how life happens? That's history, right?
If you look at Seaboard 10 years from now, what would you like to see there?
Wheelchair ramps for me. Oh my goodness. Well, you know, you can't really project. All you can do is project and hope and see and just build in malleability and permutation ability because things change.
Yeah.
Like when I, as I said, when I went to Carolina Crossroads with my cap out saying, I would like to Seaboard to do something for you, I was thinking about dry cleaning and maintaining uniforms. And they've come back to me a year later with, no, we want you to train hospitality people. Wow. And so, you see, who knew?
You and have
so
to move forward.
You just
forward.
Have to stay open and listen to people because we're not there to push our way, ours being the Eastern Seaboard Trust and sort of me. But you've even though I have some cousins who are irate and think that's all I'm doing, being bossy and pushy, which is how I was as a child and they remember it. But we're really listening to the, you know, the townspeople and what they want to do.
Wow.
And we made a list, and now we're going down that list.
We might be long. What a project. And what a nice man you are to spend time talking to your friends in Chapel Hill.
Oh,
we love it when you come back.
Thank you.
Thanks, William Ivy Long. Thanks to all y'all for listening. I'll be back same time tomorrow.